Live from America's finest city, this is Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700.
Welcome. This is Real Talk San Diego. This is your host, Ryan White. This is the Real Estate Radio Hour. We have with us today, four-time repeat offender?
This Karen is Cassino? My fourth time.
Four-time repeat offender, Karen Cassino. We hold the bar pretty high after four times, right?
I guess
right?
so,
We
yeah.
got to get it right this time,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, so if I don't get invited back, then I know I didn't pass.
We will know why, yes, that's right. As well with us, we have Mr. Rich Feuerstein, Esquire, right? Did I say that right? Feuerstein?
A rookie,
that's right. That's right. Karen Cassino is with the Cassino CPA firm. Her website is fraudsafecpa.com. As well as Mr. Rich Feuerstein, he is with Feuerstein and Murphy. His website is FeuersteinandMurphy.com. Now I'm going to tell you why you care what their websites are. We are talking about the business of living in San Diego. And most of us spend a lot of time working to make that mortgage payment. Real estate is not cheap here. It is a big part of the San Diego economy. It is one of the major reasons most San Diegans go to work every day. What is Warren Buffett's number one investment advice? Don't lose money, right? You make 3% this year, you lose 2% next year. It is so difficult to recover from the loss of money. That is his number one investment advice. Don't lose money. So how does that parlay into what these two are doing? Well, some of our conversation is going to be centered on splitting up assets. And well, commonly in California, it's 50-50 or 50-50-ish, right? Isn't that, Mr. Feuerstein, isn't that kind of what we're looking at? 50-50-ish?
Sometimes 49-51.
I would consider that 50-50-ish. Got it. So we are talking about separating. And really, the best advice is don't get divorced. But we're going to make the assumption that ship has sailed and it is, let's say, irreconcilable differences, right? That's what we most commonly hear.
Right.
So if you're still talking about splitting things 50-50, some of the best ways that you can avoid the massive downturn that might happen with only 50% of the assets all of a sudden seems pretty harsh, right? So net worth, we're talking about people's net worth and we're talking about celebrities, athletes, wealthy people, as well as, well, the common guy, right? The blue collar guy, the white collar guy. They don't have to be a football player to have LLCs and other entities involved. But when you really get to the high net worth people, and we were talking about this a little bit before the show, a couple families out there that their whole business is just managing their money. They don't go to work to an office to make a widget. They go to work, if they do, to manage the family's money, because a shift of 5 or 6% return on the money can be $1 billion a year, a substantial amount of money. So we are talking about different ways to track down and identify how to divide using, well, LLCs, trusts. I'm sure there's a variety of different methods you go through when you track some of these things down, Karen.
Yes. What we see a lot of times is people that have complex estates with LLCs and real estate and companies and thirty-five or 40 bank accounts. And they do that because they're wealthy and they do have to put their assets in different places. And as you're saying, they want to get the best rate of return. So they're moving things around. Mm-hmm. They have, you want to diversify your investments, right? You don't want to have everything in real estate. You want to have some in other investment types. You want to have businesses. You want to have race horses. Those don't make money.
Okay.
But the wealthy people have that just kind of naturally, but people that are trying to be manipulative and not show what they really own also have those types of estates, and they are complex on purpose because they anticipate that somebody down the road might be divorcing them, or perhaps they've been through a divorce before and they've made it complex and difficult for someone like Rich and I to figure out what they really have. So, again, it could be that they're just rich and they have a lot of complexity, or it could be that they're rich and they have complexity because they don't want anyone to figure out what it is they really have.
So sometimes, Ryan, it's like if you've ever seen one of those shows where they're having an FBI manhunt and they have charts and pictures and arrows pointing all over the place.
Sure.
The first thing we have to do is figure out what is there, and then we go through the process of sorting that all out.
It makes a lot of sense. So one of the ways people, and a lot of these entities are used, not necessarily, I'm not going to use the word hide, but to, let's say, diverge funds that may be required to be paid in taxes in different entities so that there's less taxable events happen. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I have an LLC set up, is to, so I can play some games with respect to taxes, save for retirement and other things like that. So it's not necessarily of malicious intent, but it does complicate things a lot.
Exactly. Exactly. You're exactly right. It smart people and savvy people will have a lot of different entities, and they're doing it to save on taxes. They're doing it to just diversify their investments. But what I commonly see, and the reason why people hire me, is because, not necessarily trying to figure it out, but because there is some game playing going on there. We also have a large percentage of our clients that don't pay their taxes. So as you're saying that you do things to make it so you pay less taxes, we actually see a lot of people that just don't pay their taxes at all and don't report all of their income. But so we see a lot of different varieties of what you're talking about today.
We're talking with Karen Cassino, the Cassino CPA firm. Her website is fraudsafecpa.com, fraudsafecpa.com. So Karen, that brings up a good point. Why don't you describe what it is that you do? We've kind of touched on the fringes, but why don't you go ahead and tell us your specialty?
So my specialty, I can do some kind of typical divorce cases that Rich and I will, let's say, work on together. That is just someone owns a business, someone has a piece of real estate that they live in, and maybe they've got a rental property, and that's not difficult to divide up. I can do a business appraisal, figure out what the company is worth, and everyone divides it up. There might be a support payment, and they move on with their lives. Where it gets more complicated, and the cases that are more important to have someone like me involved, is one where they're not reporting all of their income, that they report on their tax return that they lose money every year, yet they're living in Rancho Santa Fe with five Porsches in the driveway, and they've managed to purchase 16 rental properties over the last 4 years. So one would question, where's the money coming from to be able to do that? So we get those types of cases, and then we get a fair amount of cases where there's just a lot of assets, and the out spouse, meaning the person that's not managing all that, and a lot of times it's the wife, it's not always, but most of the time it is, and now they're getting divorced. The wife has to know she never paid attention to what they had. She never even knew how they were making their money. So we get involved in those cases sometimes just to help explain what they have and how the income is generated, and then perhaps how they're going to divide things up so that they can both move on with their lives.
Talk with Karen Cassino. She's with the Cassino CPA firm, fraudsafecpa.com. That's her website, fraudsafecpa.com. So someone that may have come in and, let's say, paid their attorney in cash, that may raise a red flag. I mean, that may be something you want to look into. Maybe there's a reason they're paying in cash as opposed to writing a check.
You know, it's not that as much as Karen touched upon this expression called the outspouse. And anyway, what that means is, so sometimes, typically, the wife will come in and she'll say, my husband is self-employed, and he's the one who's been taking care of the family finances, and he's been paying the bills. And I don't really know a lot about what we have, assets, liabilities, cash, things like that. that's when I love to work with Karen, or a person who does what Karen does. That's what they excel at. They will sit down, help educate the wife, and also walk through where we could possibly find things. Do we look into bank accounts? Do we look at this asset? We have the ability as attorneys to send out subpoenas, to do discovery, to take depositions. And Karen kind of helped, you know, as the attorney, we're the head football coach. All we do is we sort of oversee it, and we have to have really good people working with us on the specialized area. Karen's a great specialist. We bring her in. We have her help me and help the wife find where things are.
Makes a lot of sense. She's hunting around for the cash, sniffing it out, right? That's the idea. And you called that the out spouse, the one that is not necessarily not providing an income, but if there's money to be hid, they're not the ones hiding it.
She's just been kind of in the dark. You know, she, and I hate to use generalities or gender distinctions. In this case, I'm using the wife, but it's not always the wife. She's raised the kids. She's taken care of the family. She hasn't really paid attention. She didn't anticipate there was going to be a divorce. And now the divorce comes and she's clueless.
Right. Right. That makes sense. We're talking with Rich Fierstein. His website is FiersteinandMurphy.com. That's the website. FiersteinandMurphy.com. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the large incomes relating to contracts, movie deals, and ownership of companies. Ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We've been talking with Karen Cassino and Rich Fierstein about dividing up of wealth. We talked a little bit about, well, I'm going to describe it as the Law and Order criminal intent episode. You remember there's the Law and Order where there's homicide, there's a Law and Order where it's Special Victims Unit, and there's the Law and Order's criminal intent where the people are stealing and hiding money, right? They always have a big whiteboard. As you mentioned, flowchart, they always say follow the money.
Yes.
Right? That's
right.
You.
That's
what you
my
do,
office.
Right?
That's what Karen does.
That's what Karen
my
does.
Office.
Okay.
We have flowcharts all over our walls.
Fraud CPA.
Fraud CPA. Okay, excellent. So we talked a little bit about the complications that can arise with different entities being formed, trusts and LLCs and companies, and how you're kind of, I guess, peeling back the onion, so to speak, with respect trying to determine, well, what the company's actual worth is, if necessary, or where the money's at, right? And this is all under the pretense that you're looking at a way of dividing up the funds.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Got it. Got it. Okay. So you have a story here that talks about splitting up of, well, let's call it personal assets.
Yes.
You just want to take us right to the edge, don't you, Ryan?
Yes.
So Rich and I will both say that a couple of times a year, a few times a year. So as you said, people come in and we're dividing up their assets and things that they have spent money on. And normally things you spend money on, if it's not just, you know, living expenses, it creates an asset. So one of the assets that sometimes we hear about is breast implants, because it's a sizable investment.
Sizable.
Oh, nice choice of words.
Sizable
investment.
I caught that.
Can be 10, 12, 13, 15 thousand. And that is an asset that the wife takes with her once they get divorced. And so this mainly comes up when it happens right before the parties separate.
And it often does.
And it often does.
And it breeds emotional response. Like, hey, you got that just before the separation and I'm not going to have the benefit of using it.
Yes.
Yes. So how does one determine right before the separation?
Well, it's odd, but date of separation is not always an absolute date. You would think it would be.
Right.
So people will come in and they'll have different versions of date of separation. So it's not always when the party moved out. It's not always when they stop sleeping in the same bed. It's not always, an event that both of them agree on. But there will be a separation or just emotional discord. They are having issues. And a lot of times that's when the breast implants come into being, is when they're going through this transitional period and she goes out and gets breast implants, the community means the two of them, pay for that.
Right.
And so usually the husband comes and says, wait, that's an asset that she's taking with her, so we're going to charge her with that. So that's, it's like the house. You get the house and it has $100,000 of equity. You get the breast implants. They cost 10 grand. That goes on your side of the ledger.
I had a husband once who was frustrated by it. And, you know, it's obviously a very unique and personal asset. And there's no way to split it up, Ryan. So he asked me if I thought that I could resolve the case by him having monthly visitation.
That work?
It didn't work out.
Didn't work out.
No.
He kind of gave up his visitation rights, didn't he? So
indeed,
that's a very interesting concept. How far pre-separation would I have to get my breast implants in order to not have that show up as a line item on my divorce?
Well, that is
that's a really good question.
That's a good question. Uh-huh. That would be open to interpretation, and the facts and circumstances of the case is, you know, we don't usually spend a lot of time on that in California. California is what we call a no-fault divorce state.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter what anybody did. It's still going to be divided up 50-50. So it doesn't really matter. So the court doesn't really want to hear the sordid details of, you know, well...
The short answer is the farther away you get from the implant, the less of an issue it's going to be. It tends to only be an emotional issue if it's close to the separation.
Yeah, yep. I can see that.
That's true.
I can see that. Okay. We talked about large income events before, contracts, movie deals, ownership of companies. How does that play into effect here?
Well, it's not always easy. Let's talk about a Brad Pitt or, you know, an Angelina Jolie who recently got married last year. So if they were to get divorced today, we would have to go and look at a bunch of things. We'd have to look at the fact that they were only married for a short period of time, and each of them came into the marriage with wealth. And so if you come into a marriage with wealth or with assets, that's considered to be what we call separate property. So they each would have separate property, and then they each have, while you're married, whatever you make is community. It belongs to both of you. And so if you've got a contract, let's say, to do a movie, and Brad is in the middle of a movie and they get separated, and he's getting $14 million per movie, a forensic accountant like me could come in and say, well, how we'd look at the contract for the movie. We'd say, you know, he's getting $14 million. He's halfway done with the movie. So there's a $7 million what they've already earned. And then the $7 million he's going to earn past that date is actually his separate property because it's post-separation. So those are the types of things we do. And even smaller in cases is, you know, someone may be a doctor and he's got a contract to give services to a certain hospital for a period of time. And so we have to look at the duration of that contract and when the date of separation is and figure out what's community versus what's separate property.
I can see that. That makes sense. That makes sense. So same thing with signing bonuses, right? You've got on your athletes and signing bonuses, that same basic concept?
Yeah, that's a little tougher because an athlete will get a signing bonus and then they sign a so they'll get a signing bonus and then they'll sign a contract, let's say for 3 to 5 years or longer. But a lot of athletes, particularly football players, don't have a 3 to 5 year career. I think the average, because I've actually worked on a lot of football players, is something like less than 5 years that they stay in
average
the national football
career.
Because of injuries.
Right.
So you would look at that and say, well, he got a $10 million signing bonus. The wife that's married to him at the time, if she hired Rich, he'd say that $10 million is fully earned right now because that's what he earned just from signing. But he might say, no, not really. It was for the whole contract. It was for the whole, you know, for me to go work for that team. And so... And maybe I'm going to be there it's a 5-year contract, so I earn it over the next 5 years. So you could see how there's some argument
there. That's why attorneys get rich and judges sign, judges hear cases, because these things are not clear, and sometimes it depends upon who makes the best argument. The simplest way to look at it is you look at the character of the bonus. Is it a reward for past services? And if those services occurred during the marriage, then it's going to be 100% community property, or is an advance for future services. And in that case, the date of separation comes into play. And if those services are going to be performed after the date of separation, then it's not community property. It could be used as a source of support, of course, but it's not community property. In the case of a football player, you know, you're going to argue that both ways. The wife is going to say, "Hey, wait a second, I was here when he went through training. I was here when he played for his previous team or his previous college, and I held down the fort, and I'm responsible for this, so I want it." And he's going to say, as Karen said, "I'm putting my life at risk. This is going to be earned over the next 4 or 5 years when I'm playing in the NFL and getting the heck kicked out of me, and it's mine, and it shouldn't be shared." So, you know, again, I tell people every day, Ryan, this is more of an art than it is a science, and there are not a lot of hard and fast rules, but there's a lot of interpretation.
And, you know, when it gets really complicated is when that athlete remarries right away. And now you've got a new wife in the picture, and she is pretty savvy usually, and she's saying, "Hey, wait a minute, I get most of that. Now we're married." So you enter when these high net worth people have these issues and then they get married right away, you've got another community estate that's being created at the same time that you're trying to divide up the other one.
Yeah, sounds complicated. Complicated like crazy.
Crazy. And everybody is motivated by money, unfortunately. And sometimes, I won't say all of the time, but sometimes the spouses that come into the picture later when the person's already very wealthy are a little more motivated by the money and a little more knowledgeable about what they need to do to vest themselves in that money. And so that always adds an interesting layer of complicated problems. Is you got a savvy person in there that maybe got an attorney, and they're already, some of those people will see an attorney before they're even married. Not that they get a prenup or a postnup, but they're planning for, how do I get this money commingled? How do I get it so that if we divorce down the road, that I'm going to get
my chunk.
Yeah, and most likely there will be a prenup, but that's a 1 hour topic for our next show, because that's in and of itself, complicated area.
We're talking with Rich Feirstein. His website is FeirsteinandMurphy.com, FeirsteinandMurphy.com, as well as Karen Cassino, the Cassino CPA firm. Her website is FraudSafeCPA.com. When we come back, we're going to touch on spousal and child support. Ahead of us, we come back. Welcome back. We're talking with Karen Cassino and Rich Feirstein. We talked previously about some complexities associated with big contracts and movie deals and ownership of company. We're going to continue on. I guess it's not really shifting gears, but continue on a little bit about spousal and child support. And you have listed here a case in California with Emilio Estevez. What did he do?
Charlie Sheen's brother, by the way, for those of you who don't go back to the 80s. This is a case, this was sort of a landmark case in the 80s that stood for the concept of, how do you treat child support with extraordinarily high wage earners? So at the time, he was a pretty successful actor, and he was what the court deemed an extraordinarily high wage earner. The significance of that is Estevez, in his child support case, he came into the court and he said, "I don't want anybody looking into my personal finances. It's private. It's my stuff. And I'm not going to show it to anybody. However, I do agree to pay anything the court deems reasonable, consistent with the needs of my child." And the court decided that in the case of an extraordinarily high wage earner, they would focus on the reasonable needs of the child, and they would set an amount to be paid, regardless of looking at his income.
How does one simply say to the court, I'm not going to provide my income document?
Well, it's a very unique case. You don't see it happen much today, Ryan. Most of the time, if people come in and say that, they go, too bad, you're going to show us anyway.
Right.
But what he's saying is, it doesn't matter. You set the amount. You tell me what it is that I'll pay, and I'll pay it. In other words, he's stipulating ahead of time to any amount of support in order to avoid people snooping into his finances.
Right.
Do you follow
me? The amount that makes sense for the children to receive.
Exactly.
Regardless of how much I have.
Exactly.
And I'm willing to step up to that. So because he was willing to, I would say, it seems like what usually happens is the amount of money the spouse has determines the support. In this case, he did the opposite, determined what was needed, and he applied that regardless of how much he had.
Most states, including California, use guidelines, and the guidelines take into consideration several components: the number of children, the percentage of timeshare with each parent, father's income and mother's income. And that's how California determines child support, the California guideline support formula. The vast majority of cases, all contested cases, are decided under the guidelines. This Estevez case is a very unique case that you don't see occurring very often. Most of us are just subject to the guidelines, which are mandatory, and that's how the judge is going to set your child support.
We're talking with Rich Feirstein. His website is Feirstein and Murphy. One more time, his website is FeirsteinandMurphy.com.
So the way that this comes up is, you plug in the numbers into the formula, to the guidelines.
And you could find it online, by the way. You could just Google California Child Support Calculator, and it'll call up that formula
there.
For you.
Yes. So you could do it at home. You could put in, you know, your income numbers, visitation. And so with a high earner, you plug in those numbers, and it comes out with an unreasonable amount of child support.
Unreasonable
amount.
Okay.
So you put in, let's say, I use Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie earlier. You put in that you make $28 million a year and child support is $250,000 a month.
Right.
And so that's when the court says, oh, that's too high. So now we need to go to what the children actually need. And that's when I come into the picture, is we actually go through the expenses of the children and figure out what the child actually needs. Now, that's not as easy as you think, because the child has to live in the same lifestyle that the dad,
the high earner,
lives in. So dad can't be living in Rancho Santa Fe in a 10,000 square foot home, and mom lives in a
double wide in Santee.
So the children have to be able to live in something. Now, mom doesn't necessarily get to live in a 10,000 square foot house in Rancho Santa Fe. There's some judgment call in there. There has to be something similar. And I have my hands in the air. And so that's where someone like me comes into play. And, you know, we figure out what they actually have been spending on the children. And then we'll do some allocations of household expenses relating to how big the house is and the car that they drive. And we've actually had cases in the past where the kids take limousines to school every day, and they've always done that. And sometimes I don't really understand that, because the wife doesn't work, but it's okay. I mean, that's what they've done in the past. So we allow that to happen. And so we calculate those things. And so sometimes the amount of child support's actually fairly high. The child actually needs $35,000 a month.
It's wow.
You know, and as you listen to Karen, you think to yourself, it's sort of a subjective interpretation, right? So the smart people going through court try to resolve cases, and they try to keep expenses down. And the best way to do it is to hire a person like Karen as a neutral. A neutral doesn't represent either party. A neutral works for the court and makes this report for the court. As Karen was describing, let's just try to assess the reasonable needs of the child, and gives that information to the judge. When you have two very highly competent CPAs on either side, one representing the father, one representing the mother, you can imagine the subjectivity of those interpretations, and it's confusing to the court. It blurs. It makes for a lot of controversy and a lot of expense. So hire Karen as a neutral. Good way to go.
Good advice. That's good advice. You talk here about athletes might choose the team they're playing on depending on what state they're in.
Yeah, there was a good article in the UT. I think I caught it on Sunday or maybe a couple of Sundays ago, and it talked about state taxes. I think that California, you guys, is number one. Everybody agree with that?
Number one is it highest?
California has the highest percentage of state
income tax. I believe that's true.
And so sometimes, Ryan, you'll have an athlete who is being courted by several teams. Maybe it's a free agent, or maybe it's a rookie, a draftee being signed out of college. And one of the things that comes into play is how much state tax am I going to have to pay out of this contract? You've all heard of cases where athletes have left California. I think that happened with Phil Mickelson not too long ago when he decided he was going to change his residence from Rancho Santa Fe to Florida because of the state tax. There was a big public outcry, like, how could he leave us? He's our local guy. But how can you blame him if he has to pay 13% in one place and zero in another?
Right. That is a big difference. We're talking with Rich Fierstein. Fierstein and Murphy. His website is fiersteinandmurphy.com. That's his website. FiersteinandMurphy.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about lots of kids, short-term marriages, and what I think would be, we should start with first, is spending ridiculous amounts of money on a monthly basis. Ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. This is Ryan White here. This is Real Talk San Diego, the Real Estate Radio Hour. We've been talking with Karen Cassino and Rich Fierstein. As promised, we are going to discuss spending ridiculous amounts of money on a monthly basis. And why is this important? Why do we need to figure this out? How does this play into what we're talking about here?
So the courts in California are going to try, when you get divorced, to keep everyone at the same marital lifestyle, marital standard of living. They'd like to keep everyone at the same marital standard of living. Now, that doesn't make a lot of sense when you're taking a pot of money that people make and then you're dividing it into two households. And so now there's two households where there was one. So it doesn't make sense that you both would be able to live the same lifestyle as you lived before. But that's the goal of what the courts try to do. And so in situations where there's a lot of wealth, or maybe with somebody that's their income's going up a lot post-separation, we do look at what the parties were spending when they were married, and that is what the court may use in terms of a guideline for spousal and child support. Is they're going to try and keep that marital lifestyle the same? And so when you have a couple that I've had, and I'm sure Rich has had too, where there's they spend $100,000 a month, and that's not even the highest I have. And
how much?
$100,000 a month.
What do they buy?
So you would say that. You would say, how does a person spend $100,000 a month? Usually the way that they do it is they have multiple households. If you stick with one household and maybe one vacation home, you're going to be within a normal range of spending, even if your spouse goes out and shops at Nordstrom's and Saks Fifth Avenue and Neiman Marcus all the time, you're not going to get to 100,000. Where you get to 100,000, 200,000 is when you've got five homes. You've got the home here in Rancho Santa Fe. You've got your home in Aspen. You've got your home in Palm Springs. You've got your home in Hawaii.
Don't look at me when you say that.
And all of these homes have to have, you know, monthly utilities. A lot of them have to have staff. A lot of them have to eat. Each location has to have a car. They all have insurance. That's really where you get into a lot of expenses when you have multiple homes.
Got it.
Multiple. That are not being rented out.
Sure, sure, sure.
Or if you shop at Walmart.
Of course, of course. So you've seen instances where $200,000 was someone's monthly income that was awarded?
Well, so I'll take that question, right? So, When the court has to decide a reasonable amount of spousal support. Now we're talking about spousal support, not child support. Another word for another word for alimony. Same
Thank
thing,
you.
Alimony, spousal support, but not child support. As Karen said, the cornerstone of any spousal support award is the marital standard of living. But the first thing the judge will look at is something called the income and expense declaration. It's a form that gets submitted to the court. Even if you're doing private dispute resolution. That's where it all starts, is with the income and expense declaration. And they have you fill out the expense portion, right? So the award of spousal support that's made has to take into consideration what are those reasonable expenses. As you might imagine, they often get exaggerated. They often get fluffed up a little bit. But yes, we do see income and expense declarations that have $100,000 or $200,000 on it. It's rare. When I'm representing the assistant plumber, I'm not seeing those kinds of numbers. But sometimes you do get that sort of a case. And then the court has to decide, is there the income to sustain anything even approaching an award of that amount?
Wow. We're talking with Rich Feirstein. His website is FeirsteinandMurphy.com. That's his website, FeirsteinandMurphy.com. Talking about spousal support, not child support, in this case, hundreds of thousands of dollars, in an effort to maintain the marital lifestyle that was before, right? That's, well, one could certainly think that kind of monthly expense can certainly have a drain on the overall wealth of the person paying it. So with the understanding that Warren Buffett says don't lose money, I say yet again, don't get divorced.
Yeah,
probably the best way to go around that. Okay, kids, talking about drain on the expenses. Kids, you have here 1D. Many of them have lots of kids. And I have kids, two of them. They're a drain emotionally, financially, you name it. I might argue it's worth it, but it's certainly a drain. Six, seven children?
So when Karen and I were preparing for this show today, and we probably spent a good 15 seconds or so doing that.
Too long.
Karen's outline included a section on child support for, you know, multiple children. We were thinking, because this is ESPN radio, that we would discuss maybe some cases of athletes, either athletes that we've had or athletes that we have heard about. And Karen asked me to talk about a case where I did have an athlete who had several children in several different states. And in this particular case that I'm thinking about, he had one child in Wisconsin, and he had one child in the Las Vegas area, and he had one child here in California. And we talked about the guidelines a little while ago. Well, each state has their own guidelines. They're sort of close. There's not a large variation from state to state, but each state has their own guidelines. When you have a case like this, or when we see a case like this, Warren Buffett said the key to,
the key to
saving money is don't lose money. And you guys in real estate, you say the key is location, location, location. In family law, the thing for everybody to remember is resolve, resolve, resolve.
Okay.
So in this case that I'm talking about, where there were three kids in three different states, we made a point of reaching out to the mother in each state, and we made a point of negotiating an agreement. And oddly enough, the numbers were really divergent. I think the Wisconsin case settled for $200. The Las Vegas case settled for about $1,500. The California case was maybe $3,000. This is all for the same kids of the same father, but these are the amounts that the mother was looking to take for resolution, or willing to take. You don't have to follow the guidelines if the court is not deciding the child support case.
Talking with Rich Feirstein. Again, his website is FeirsteinandMurphy.com. So how were you you're negotiating support for all these three children in three different states? Was there a marriage involved?
I honestly don't remember. I can tell you there was not a marriage in each one of those,
right.
But maybe there was one marriage and two baby mamas.
Got it. So you're talking child support, not spousal support in these situations.
Yeah, exactly. Child support with three different birth mothers.
Wow.
And actually there were more, but those are the three instances I recall where we were able to negotiate an agreement.
Okay, let's talk about the last one here. Short-term marriages, 1E. How long is a short-term marriage?
Well, it used to be a short-term marriage was anything under 10 years. So when you hit the 10-year mark, you were considered to be a long-term marriage. That doesn't have as much significance as it used to have. It used to kind of be a golden
once he or she is vested after 10 years.
Yes,
that's exactly right. Rights increase after a 10-year marriage is called a long-term marriage, but a 9-year marriage is not necessarily a short-term marriage. You know what I mean?
It's a gray.
Like maybe 5 or 4-year marriage is a short marriage.
And the rights of the spouses change at a long-term versus a short-term?
At a long-term marriage, you're more likely to have spousal support for a longer period of time. With a short-term marriage, typically the courts like to look at a half the length of the marriage in terms of spousal support. That's not an absolute, but kind of a rule of thumb.
Courts, when a case comes to trial at the end of the divorce, and there has been longer than a 10-year marriage, under California law, courts cannot set an ending date to the support, only by death, remarriage, or further order.
Oh. It's kind of morbid.
Doesn't mean you pay forever. You can come back in later on down the road and end it, but the trial court can't look into a crystal ball and set that track of support if there's been longer than a 10-year marriage.
Yeah. Interesting. We're talking with Rich Fierstein. One more time, his website is FiersteinandMurphy.com. That's his website, FiersteinandMurphy.com. Rich is a certified family law specialist, as well as we heard from Karen Cassino with the Cassino CPA firm. Her website is FraudSafeCPA.com. That's her website, FraudSafeCPA.com. Well, I want to thank you both for joining us. It's been very informative. And all you out there, talk to you next week.